As we wrap up week 7 of the new Buckmaster Show, I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, February the 18th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. On Fridays, the Buckmaster Show has Friday Focus. We bring in a newsmaker into the studio for questioning by myself and one of our reporters' roundtable regulars. This week, it's Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. And this week, the Friday Focus features a newsmaker interview with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dubnik. Sheriff Dubnik, good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
You know, you inspired, obviously, some very strong opinions on the night of the Tucson shootings on January the 18th, but it did really start a national dialogue, I think, about civility in this country. Do you, as you look back over those 6 weeks ago, do you have any regrets of anything you said that night?
None at all.
Nothing that you felt
you
maybe
know,
was
I,
over
I
the
had
top.
Been at some of Gabby's political events. And to see what was going on was making people like me very angry, because I thought at some point this could get out of hand and somebody's going to get hurt. Gabby felt the same way. At some point, she told her husband that she was afraid she's going to get shot. But she would have town hall events, to her credit, knowing that they're going to scream and yell and try to keep her from saying anything, and they did. And it's just not America when we do that. In my opinion.
If there had been a Pima County Sheriff's deputy there at that Safeway, would it have made any difference?
I don't think so. If you had a deputy standing right next to her, he would have probably been the first one shot, because they had no idea this individual who was approaching Gabby had a gun or was threatening her in any way. So my guess is the deputy might have been the first one shot. If you want to protect somebody in the kind of circumstance that the event that she was holding, where it's out in the open and people are invited, it's in a parking lot of a shopping center. If you want to really protect these people, you have to keep them from the public. And people like Gabby don't want to be kept from the public. You'd have to have a huge fence or an arena or a building of some kind and have magnetometers and a whole host of security people. And it's just not possible to do that. But the fact of the matter is, this could happen again today. It could happen again tomorrow. And I'm not sure what, if anything, we can do about it. We're going to be paying more attention to these events that the politicians have. And I suspect that if there was a cop car at the event, or there was a policeman in uniform or a security officer, it may have some preventive effect. But it's not going to stop somebody like Loeffner.
When you made your comments about the civility and public discourse, it was 8 hours after the shooting at the 6 p.m. Press conference. Why did you choose to make those statements then? Was it simple emotion, or did you calculate that you were going to make these statements?
Well, I was in California when I first heard about this, and as I got closer to Tucson, I got more details, and the more details I got, I guess the angrier I became. One of my personal friends, Gabby Giffords, whom I admire and respect, and who someday I hope to see in the White House, probably not before I die, and a great friend of mine, who happens to be the brother-in-law of one of our homicide lieutenant, Judge John Roll. And some people were shot, and I just was so angry I was having a hard time controlling myself. And when I got to the Westward Look, we had about an hour to prepare, to get briefed and to go out and talk to the press. And I just told the people, I'm very angry. We're going to do the press conference. When we're done with providing all the information that we can about the event, I'm going to say a few things.
And there was really no evidence at the time that it was a political shooting. So were you making an assumption that it had to do something to do with politics?
No, but let me tell you, I know a little bit about psychology, and I know that that people who are unbalanced, who are mentally fragile, are susceptible to some of the kind of rhetoric that we hear 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, particularly on radio, but some TV. And I can't help but think that influences those kind of individuals. And second of all, I think it's just irresponsible to continually try to gain your listening audience by inflaming the public and teaching them to hate government, to hate politicians, and that's what they do 24/7.
And you became the target of a lot of that vitriol the very next day on talk radio. Did that have any effect on you personally?
Well, I'm not the kind of person that enjoys criticism.
But how about those nasty emails and Rush Limbaugh about what he was saying about you?
Oh, Rush said that a few months ago, back in May.
Over SB 1070?
When you're in this business, if you can't let most of it roll off your back, you can't stay in this business very long. And it's the same true in any profession. If a young cop can't learn to deal with the stress that they're confronted with on a daily basis, they burn out very quickly. And that's true probably in any profession.
Let's go back to the whole civility thing. Since your remarks, are you pleased that, certainly you've got to be pleased. Look at the State of the Union. We had people talking about civility, and we had Democrats and Republicans maybe even sitting together at the State of the Union. That must have made you fairly happy.
It did, but what would make me happier is if the politicians, both parties, would sit down together and work out America's problems, because I think that's why they were elected by the people. You know, years ago, we had Morris K. Udall, a statesman, ran for president of the United States, as far left as you can get, but overwhelmingly elected by the people in Arizona. On the other hand, we had Barry Goldwater, a statesman, who ran for president and about as far right as you could get. But when it came time to deal with Arizona's problems, when it came time to deal with the national problems, they put their ideologies aside, they sat down and said, how are we going to solve these problems? That simply isn't happening today, and it's making people like me and a whole lot of other people very angry. If you look at how many independents there are.
Yeah, the fastest growing group in Arizona. Yeah. 13 minutes now, coming up on 14 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. Friday Focus is with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik. With me is Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com.
Change gears a little bit. Why have there been no state charges filed yet against Loeffner?
There are some very complicated legal issues, and it would be probably impossible to try to hold two major trials at the same time. So the lawyers for the state and the lawyers for the federal government are still working out how they're going to make all this happen. But eventually there will be state charges filed.
Because the federal charges can only deal with the injuries to the federal employees, right? All the other people who were shot, those have to be charged to the state, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And no statute of limitations?
That's correct.
All right.
Let's, again, switch gears a little bit and talk about the state budget up in Phoenix. How is that going to impact the Pima County Sheriff's Department?
Well, if I could answer that, I would have the ability to foresee the future, which I don't. But speaking of the future, I understand that this weekend there's going to be a special event at the Fox Theater, which made the front page of the paper this morning. One of the things that's going to be happening there is Bill Buckmaster, and I know him well, and deservedly so, is going to get a Golden Mike Award from the Arizona Advertising Association, which is a branch of the National.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Sheriff, for bringing that up. That's
but the budget. Getting back to the budget is a. I don't know how those people think in Phoenix. It must have something to do with the water they drink, but. It seems to me that on January 1st, they should have sat down and said, we're not going to do anything with these nonsensical bills some of you have to present until we get done with the budget. We're going to do what's most pressing in our state. But I don't see that happening. It's the middle of February already.
A lot of emphasis on weapons bills, including carrying weapons on campus. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you know how I feel about that. I happen to be a proponent of guns. I think everybody who feels that guns in some way enhance their safety or allow them to go out and hunt and those things, I've always supported that. Always. But not without limitations. What Arizona is doing is just insane. In my opinion, it is the people that are supposed to be protecting us are the ones that are allowing us to become, unsafe. And it's just not right.
Has there been a change in tactics that you've implemented through training programs now that anybody can carry a gun? You know, the bad guys don't have to try and hide the gun under the passenger seat anymore because they can just keep it in their belt because it's legal now. Has that changed officer safety and tactics? Are you getting more people out of the car and doing more pat-downs now because of it?
Well, Mark, I think I understand you used to be in law enforcement in some capacity. And if you were a cop out on the street, I think you would, for your own personal safety at least, consider that everybody that you're dealing with, especially under adverse circumstances, may be armed. So, yes, they do go further.
The jail population has been falling in Pima County, and apparently this is not an anomaly just here in Pima County. What's going on?
Well, if I knew the answer to that, I should have a different job. It's a very, very complicated situation. The fact of the matter is, crime is down. Our calls for service are down. Not just us, but in the city. And as I understand it, this is happening in most of the country. So you would expect, with the status of the economy, that it would be just the opposite. But in fact, fewer people are being arrested, and consequently, we have about 10% fewer people in our jail. And that's never happened in my 53 years as a cop in this community. The population has gone up every year.
Speaking of the jail, South Tucson hasn't been paying their jail bill. What's up with that? Is that having an effect on your operations at the jail? Or are you going to tell South Tucson, I can't take your guys anymore?
No, this is an issue for the Board of Supervisors. They collect money, and as a matter of fact, we don't have any money. And it doesn't impact our operation at all, but it's a matter for the Board of Supervisors to decide how they're going to deal with this issue. As I understand it, South Tucson is paying interest on the money they owe.
And your budget's, I think, due to the county administrator soon. Anything that we can see for next year that's going to be major changes, improvements, cuts?
You know, the county manager and the board get a lot of criticism, but I am one of their biggest fans. Chuck Huckleberry, several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, anticipating what was happening with our economy and what was going to happen when the state started transferring more responsibility down to counties so they wouldn't have to raise the taxes, started preparing and putting the brakes on certain things that the county departments were doing, including our own. We've had to make a lot of adjustments. So I can say that we've been very, very fortunate, but what is the state going to do to us now? I don't know. If they decide to do away with their State Department of Juvenile Corrections, that's going to have a pretty significant impact. If they decide they're going to start putting drunk drivers back in county jails that are now in state prisons, that will have a huge impact on us.
So until that's resolved, no new law enforcement initiatives that'll be we can see in your budget in the near future?
No, we're in kind of an afloat mode. We're trying to stay afloat, and we're trying to survive.
We're coming up now on 20 minutes past the hour on Friday Focus. We're talking with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dubnyk. This would be a good time to take a commercial break on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with about 5 or 6 more minutes with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dubnyk and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroMorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Twenty-four minutes now past the hour. This is Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. We are talking with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik. Joining me in the questioning, Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. Sheriff, getting back to your remarks on the night of January 8th of the Tucson shootings, what surprised you the most about the reaction that came in really from all over the country?
I had no idea, and this is, of course, my opinion, how much hatred for government and for elected officials.
Where's that coming from, this hatred?
Well, I think it's coming from people like Rush Limbaugh.
There was the recent flap between border mayors and Sheriff Babu up in Pinal County about the status of crime and the safety of the border. You've got the border mayor saying it's not as bad as Sheriff Babu is making it out to be, and then you had Janet Napolitano a couple of weeks ago in El Paso saying the border is not out of control. So what's your take on it? Because you do have a border enforcement team that's out there every day. Is it as good as the Homeland Security Secretary is saying it is, or is it as bad as your colleague up north is saying it is?
Well, Let me say this about that. If you look at the statistics over a 10-year period, the number of arrests for illegal entrance has dropped by 75% over 10 years. Meanwhile, the force, the Border Patrol, has more than doubled. But the arrests are down 75%. So I think one could assume from that the people coming across the border have been reduced substantially, if not dramatically. you can argue what the reason for that is. But we still have a huge problem with narcotics. Most of the narcotics that come into the country come right in through this corridor just west of us. And that's still a huge problem. But comparatively speaking, the border is much more secure than it used to be.
Now, when Border Patrol agent Terry was killed a few months ago, did that cause you to evaluate the tactics of your team that you have out there? Have you looked at see whether that they're safe enough, or they have the equipment that they need, the response times that they need?
Let me tell you, if I thought it was unsafe to send our people out there, they wouldn't be out there. We have a force of almost 20 people, two different units. They have Border Patrol support. We have a Border Patrol supervisor assigned to each unit. We have the finest equipment available, and we work together. That's not an unusual problem that they were dealing with. I can't really evaluate what happened down there because I don't have the facts.
Right. Care to speculate on why the use of non-lethal projectiles first while they were getting shot at before they went back to bullets? Is that something that your guys do? Are you guys out there with beanbags?
No.
Let's talk about that, the fatal helicopter crash and the team that was out there. They were scouting locations for improving, I believe, the communications among law enforcement here in southern Arizona. That was one of the knocks on January 8th, that law enforcement wasn't able to communicate as well among themselves. Is that a big problem?
It is a problem, but that is one that we addressed about 6 years ago. With a huge bond issue, over $100 million, to provide one public safety radio network for the entire county. But after 6 years, we still haven't got it implemented, but this helicopter was on a mission to assist in that project, looking for a site on a hill.
Now, I've heard that you've found a peak, but the BLM has concerns about putting the antenna on that peak. Is that going to cause delays?
We can't do anything without somebody raising a controversy when it comes to whether we're out there killing rattlesnakes or putting an antenna on a peak. Sometimes we go a little bit overboard and common sense gets lost in the process, but it is an issue.
One of the downsides of the budget was a cutback in prevention, law enforcement prevention, deputies going into schools, talking with young people. That would seem like that would be a very important area, and one that it's not making any sense to cut that area.
It is, and it broke my heart when we had to do suspend the program. Hopefully at some point things will improve and we'll go back to doing that, because I am a firm believer in crime prevention, and crime prevention at the earliest ages is by far the most effective. So it broke my heart.
Only got a few seconds left. You have a quick question, Mark?
Any thoughts on the drop house bill that Kirsten Sinema and some other Republicans have proposed, the SB 1225, I think?
I'm
supposed to give you more authority in order to investigate drop houses.
We don't really need any more authority to investigate drop houses. We have all the authority that we need.
Got to go on that note. Sheriff Clarence Stupnik, thank you very much for being our Friday Focus guest on the Buckmaster Show. Mark Evans, you stick around because we've got the Friday Roundtable coming up.
Political views collide.
This is exactly what I'm talking about.
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. There is complete chaos in the capital of Bahrain. At least four people were killed in fighting between protesters and security forces today. CNN's Arwa Damon says she was talking to a man who was covered in blood when they heard shots.
There was a barrage of tear gas and gunfire that went off into the air. It was pretty sustained. The protesters all began running back.
There are reports of 20 deaths and 200 injuries during clashes in Libya. There's no school in Madison, Wisconsin for the third day in a row because of a protest by teachers. State lawmakers might vote today on a controversial plan to reduce collective bargaining rights for state workers. The House is getting closer to taking a vote on a Republican plan to cut $60 billion from this year's federal budget. Congress has to get something done before March 4th, or else the government will shut down. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
Ford Service presents Mike Rowe talking about getting to work.
No, that's wrong.
Why don't you just tell us what you're talking about then?
I'm talking about getting the works at a Ford dealership.
Ah, the works is an oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection, and more, just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate.
See, now you're talking about the works.
Well, with the works, there's a lot to talk about.
Visit your Ford dealer and see if the works works for you.
Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating dealership for rebate details through 3/31/11.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. See your doctor for checkups and call for a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate has plant sterols shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-747-0319. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-747-0319. That's 1-800-747-0319.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and on the World Wide Web anytime at buckmastershow.com. Time for the Friday Radio Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. Mark sticks around from our interview with Sheriff Dupnik. Jim Ninsel is here from the Tucson Weekly, and Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. I want to begin, Sarah, with this talk about a memorial for the victims of January the 8th, the Tucson shootings. The Arizona Daily Star editorial this week urged caution, saying don't rush the memorial. There's been cases, I guess, in Oklahoma City, up in Colorado, where maybe things were pushed a little too fast and not really analyzed what is best for the community.
Yeah, and I think everyone's heard talk of there should be a memorial, where should it be, what should be done. And so what we did is we each kind of divvied up doing research at a place that has been through this before. And what we found was, I thought was particularly telling in Columbine with the high school tragedy there, was that as they got underway, it was all good intentions, all people wanting to do something for the families. And they went through this huge, long process, invited the families at the beginning. Not everyone was interested or able to participate at that point. And so they got into the process, got a design, got an architect, all of that, and then presented it to the families. And it did not go over well because the families were not involved from the very beginning. So the key we found was to have people who were directly affected, the families, go on their timetable. Don't try to do it as something for the families. It has to be with the families.
Jim, you attended a news conference this week announcing a big benefit concert for the night of March the 10th at the Tucson Arena to raise money for this newly established fund for civility, respect, and understanding.
Yeah, this is something that Ron Barber, who was Gabrielle Gifford's district director, still is, but is on leave, was thinking about after he was in the ICU in a way to try to harness the goodwill he saw pouring forth from the community in the wake of the shootings. And so what he is trying to do is set up a fund that would help help both folks with mental illness and also look at ways to try to get folks to get along a little bit better, which, you know, oddly enough, I think would be of great help at the Arizona legislature, both things. But yeah, it sounds like a really good effort. It's going to be underdone by the or the it's going to be handled
the,
by
the umbrella community foundation,
the community foundation of Southern Arizona, which has also taken on the job of handling. There were three funds out there. KVOA had started a fund, Safeway had started a fund, and then Homicide Survivors had started a fund to help the victims of the shootings with a lot of their medical bills, with out of pocket expenses related to funeral expenses, things of that nature. And those funds have all merged now into a single fund as well. And I was also at that press conference. I happened to be talking to Barbara LaWall, who was part of this effort, and I asked her the same thing that Mark asked the sheriff earlier about the prosecution, state charges being brought. And she told me something I didn't realize, which is that the federal government's actually looking at trying to prosecute all the the entire incident based on the fact that it was a federal event. And that may or may not fly in court, but that's part of the direction the feds are now looking. So we'll see how that
some of the double jeopardy issues. So.
I think so. Yeah. So that's one thing they're looking at.
In terms of the memorial, you know, I think we absolutely need a memorial, and I agree with Sarah. We should go slow with it. But I don't want to see the memorial siphoning off funds to the victims' fund, because I think people really need to realize what the incredible expense that many of these families had to go through these shootings. I mean, for not only funeral expenses, but then their medical treatment, people coming from out of town, that lost time at work. They've cost these people an enormous amount of money, and I would like to see the victims fund supported first, and to help these people get through that. One of the things I wanted to mention in terms of the victims fund is give a huge shout out to the kids at Ironwood Ridge High School. A couple of days after the shooting, their student government got together and said, what can we do about it? And they said, well, let's do something at our school similar to these Live Strong bands from the guy who rides the bicycle,
Lance Armstrong,
right? that just said, remember 1-8.
Who rides a bicycle very well.
Right. Just said, 1-8, remember 1-8-11. And so they bought 800 bands, and they sold them out in about 2 days. And they said, well, this has got something going here. Let's buy more. Well, now they've ordered or sold something on the order of 40,000 bands. They've raised, you know, nearly more than $20,000. I think they're getting close to raising $30,000. You've got multiple high schools now that are selling these bands, and I think that's just phenomenal. It's just a sign of how this horrible tragedy helped bring our community together.
And going off of that, I think it's one of the things that we think we were talking to different cities that have gone through this, that it's important to honor and remember all of the victims, because we tend to, and part of it is just, you know, there's so-and-so and so-and-so, and then the others. So every single person who died and was affected is someone's family member, loved one, coworker, beloved neighbor, and we need to honor them all together, not sort of people with better connections or higher profiles. It needs to be everyone.
I agree. And to get back to Mark's point, those folks do have a lot of expenses. And so if listeners are out there and want to send money over to the Community Foundation, that would be tremendously helpful.
Yeah, we had Carol Gaxiola on our Buckmaster show earlier this week. And she says this is not a short-term deal here. Some of these people are going to need various forms of treatment, whether it's counseling, that will go on for years, and they want to have the money available for these people.
And the legal process, too, as well. They're going to have to make their way through that, and it's very tricky. And just to mention, the Civility Fund is, of course, having this big rock and roll show coming up next month. And despite what we may have said on our blog initially, the ticket prices will be very affordable. And Jackson Browne, Alice Cooper, Calexico, Keb Moe, and a whole lineup of other folks. So you might want to check that out at the TCC. I think it's on Thursday, March 10th.
Let's segue to there's always plenty to talk about with the Arizona legislature. This week, there was a special session. Massive corporate tax cut bill introduced on Monday rushed through the special session. Jim, the governor has signed this. You had a cover story and have a cover story in the Tucson Weekly. Say You Want a Revolution. Isn't that from a song?
I believe so. It sounded right. Yeah. It's the special session alone, which is I think unprecedented to see just 3 days of testimony on a bill that will cut taxes by more than $538 million going forward, was just astonishing to behold. I mean, they just threw this thing out on Monday, and by Wednesday night they had it all sewn up, and very little testimony heard on the actual impacts of this, very little explanation of how it's somehow going to make up for the money that has been laid out through these tax cuts. And you know, we had Rob, the conservative columnist at the Arizona Republic, saying this is grossly irresponsible because there's simply no way to foresee a balanced budget for the next decade in this state as a result of this.
Thanks for describing this bill as a tax cut bill, because the Republicans in the legislature and the governor are describing it as a jobs bill. Well, there isn't a job to be found in this bill. It is a tax cut bill, and it doesn't. You know, there's 300,000 out of work Arizonans right now, and what the governor said yesterday is those Arizonans and the businesses in the state can now plan for growth in 4 years when this policy goes into effect. You know. And the thing that needs to be talked about is that this $500 million in lost revenue is going to happen the year after the half-cent sales tax for education sunsets, which brings in its own $1 billion. And so if that doesn't get referred to the voters and the voters don't pass that, you're talking about $1.5 billion in 2014 coming out of the state budget, which puts us right back into the soup. Unless we've had 20% growth over that time, then maybe we'll be fine. But I don't think anybody expects that.
20% growth seems a little unlikely, but we shall see. You know, it really does set the state on a terrible economic path at this point, and a lot of other crazy bills going on up there.
Doesn't this show the power of the majority to get this going so fast this week?
I think it does, although not all of the Republican folks were on board quite as much as I'm sure the leadership would have liked. I just wanted to mention once again, I know I keep saying this, but that people won't come to a state where we have a horrendous reputation for education, both in the performance and in the funding. They won't come to a state that has significant problems. And the overall, I mean, I live in a neighborhood where people move, they come in, they get transferred, and there have been families that I've known that have just been shocked. You know, they come from Minnesota or wherever, and they're just appalled at the quality of the education in the schools. And this was years ago. So if you can give all the tax cuts in the world, but you're not going to get people who are going to come for good jobs, companies aren't going to move here unless you can offer people a good standard of living, and a crummy education system is not part of a good standard of living.
And the same goes for the universities, the same goes for the state parks, the same goes for everything the state does. And we're not, the universities can be incredible economic drivers, and instead we're starving them.
Glenn Hamer is the executive director of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, which is generally in support of any business tax cut. our tax code for businesses, was quite cautious in his comments about it, and said, you know, on balance, yeah, we're happy to have a tax cut, but businesses also want to see, you know, that you're killing your seed corn if you're destroying your educational system, and we want to see that supported. And it's hard to fathom how education in Arizona is going to continue to be supported by the state when it's running out of money.
Let's switch to the city. The front page of the Arizona Daily Star, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, Rob O'Dell has a piece about the Fox Theater. We knew they had money problems, but I guess that issue is certainly not behind us.
Yeah, the story outlines pretty much what people have been hearing for a while, that the Fox was not bringing in the revenue they need to, and that they're not going to be able to pay back a substantial amount of money that they owe. It's the kind of thing that does not bode well for downtown. It's sort of a flagship operation. But on the other hand, there's a lot of stuff going on downtown where if everyone could just kind of get on the same page, you come out of the Fox, there's a restaurant open, that would be nice. And that's the sort of thing that gives downtown and the redevelopment effort just sort of yet another black eye, that it's seen as a failing business and it's not being operated.
Well, the Fox is a very tricky thing to operate. You know, I have friends at the Rialto Theater, and so I should lay out my bias right away. But the Fox is a very expensive place to try to do a show, and you have to get a big audience to that show in order to make money off of it. And the bigger problem for them is they ran up a huge debt rehabbing the theater and taking it from its really unusable state to a very beautiful showcase museum like quality, but it's still a very expensive place to try to do a show. And I just I wish that my friends at the Rialto Theater could have gotten 1/10 of what the Fox Theater got, and because they have something going on there several nights a week,
and they're doing well. The Rialto,
they're doing well, but they've also had the Rio Nuevo board come after them in recent months and demand rent from them, and you know, the concert business is a very, very difficult business to be in right now. Even the national guys are seeing a real downturn in the number of people willing to go out and spend money on concert tickets, and so it's not an easy business to be in. It's you're always, you know, hoping you'll do a show and you'll make money, you'll do another show, you'll lose money. It's a very tricky thing to do.
Yeah, as someone who loves historic preservation, believes that we need to preserve our history, I think the Fox is wonderful. To show what kind of the showcase, the spectacle that people back in the age used to go when going to the movies. When going to the movies was a big event. It just wasn't something that you did on a Saturday, you know, and you go and eat popcorn and spill your Coke all over the floor.
In your own living room.
Right, yeah, now with the big screen TVs. This is a tricky issue. As Jim had said earlier off the air, it's a wonderful museum, and I think it's beautiful. As an economic enterprise, I don't really have any ideas in terms of making that successful.
Remaining 3 minutes or so, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, you have a piece on TucsonCitizen.com, Beware of Do-Nothings. They're killing us, and I think you're referring at least to this the resurgent talk about a downtown arena.
Right. So anytime anybody proposes some kind of big idea for downtown or for the Tucson area in general, you get these, I call them the caves, the citizens against virtually everything, and they come out in droves. They're these professional againsters who say, well, we can't do this and we can't do that. And the private sector, if it was worth doing, the private sector would do it, and we should leave everything to the private sector. Well, big ideas need to come be fostered by the government because of its enormous economies of scale. And downtown needs the next step. Rio Nuevo, for all of its bad press, is beginning to have some very positive effects. The hottest real estate market in the city is downtown. Almost all those properties are getting snatched up down there. And those are not stupid people that are just throwing their money away. They see money to be made downtown. And I think downtown is being revitalized. And having the U of A come down in an arena, having students downtown, getting the streetcar down there, I think those are all big ideas that will complete downtown revitalization and make Tucson a place to come and visit. And so we need to beat back all these. Let's not do anything. Nothing is best. That doesn't get us anywhere.
Do you want to hamper some of his optimism, Jim Mensel?
You know, I think the biggest knock on Arena has always been that you don't have a tenant. And if the university is now serious about actually bringing the U of A Wildcats down there and some of their other sports programs, the basketball team and a few of the other sports programs, you have your tenant. And that might make it work, but the numbers are going to have to pencil out. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done at McHale at this point to rehab that. There is a facilities arms race going on among college teams. The Phil Knight effect. So, yeah. You know, it's gonna be hard for the city and the university to have the credibility to move forward with this on their own. I think you are going to have to find some kind of private sector support for it, and I don't know what form that comes in because these facilities are generally paid for by the public. So I would love to see it happen. I think this has more potential than what we've seen in the past, but there's still, you know, a lot of questions about does it pencil out. But the viability is there.
Sarah, you got the last word today.
Well, it's an idea with the U of A coming down that's been floated before, and I think it's worth exploring. But I also don't want to get into a situation like we did with the hotel where it just goes on and on and on and people diddle around and nothing ever happens until someone finally realizes years later it's a bad idea.
All right, Sarah, Jim, Mark, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Hey, is that a golden microphone you're speaking into?
Yeah,
today?
Some kind of a golden mic. I wonder if I can bring that.
We've got these old plastic ones. You've got that beautiful golden
I know. Mouth. What the heck? 52 minutes past the hour of the Buckmaster Show. We've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell coming up right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery. I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub. And they're dancing by the pool, Matt Russell. That music means Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show. Do you have those rodeo, your rodeo gear on? You got the boots now and the rodeo shirt.
I did. I took both of them out of my closet last night for our remote broadcast from Chad's Steakhouse last night. And, you know, I got those really, the boots need to get a little bit more dusty. People were complaining that they looked a little too shiny for a good Tucson pair of boots. So I need to get those back into the rotation more frequently.
You kind of were the urban cowboy. Weren't you a Chad's last night?
Indeed, I was Chad's. I traded in my tassel top loafers for my boots, and people just didn't recognize me, but I had fun nonetheless.
Did you have a big piece of prime rib at Chad's?
It was lovely. We actually had a wonderful filet with what they call a tumbleweed onion, which is this great monstrosity of an onion with seasonings and spices and peppers, deep fried for my love. It was just absolutely beautiful.
What is this about Monkey Burger?
Yeah, Monkey Burger, I think one of the most inventive and creative burger places in town, is opening up their second location. They are officially open downtown on 47 North 6th Avenue, and Chef Matthew Stricker and his team just do some great stuff. And let me remind your listeners that they assure us that no monkeys were actually harmed in the making of these burgers. My particular favorite bill is the Madness Burger, which is jalapeno slices, shredded lettuce, pepper jack cheese, fajita peppers, Tabasco scallion aioli. You throw that together with some fried pickles and you're set.
Mm. You can get a really good burger in this town, can't you?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the whole idea of a gourmet burger there's been a renaissance in the burger sphere, if you will, and so many great places around town that you can get them. Of course, Monkey Burger's original location in Williams Center, very much alive and well, and they determined that because of community outcry, there needed to be more monkeys to spread the love, so they opened up downtown on 47 North 6th Avenue. Just wonderful burgers.
Last night, you were at Chad's. Where is the On the Menu Live going next Thursday night?
Yeah, next Thursday is the countdown to Mardi Gras begins. We're going to be hosting a special remote broadcast at King Fisher American Bar and Grill at 2564 East Grant Road, and Chef Jim Murphy has got some exciting things up his sleeve for Fat Tuesday, so I hope all your listeners can tune in or join us at the party at Kingfisher next Thursday at 5 o'clock.
You know, I think my buddy here from the Friday Roundtable, Jim Ninsel, he has talked about speaking of burgers, he really likes the burger there at Kingfisher.
I'm glad you shared that, because that's one thing Jim and I share in common. I think what Murphy has done with the burger there, and of course all his great custom seafood selections, one of my favorite restaurants in town for sure.
Okay, Matt Russell, get that cowboy gear ready to go. So we've got the parade coming up and burgers and all sorts of good stuff. Matt Russell, have a great weekend.
You do the same, partner.
Thank you, sir. We're coming up now on 59 minutes past the hour. I want to remind you the Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. And speaking of Michael Flowers, Rosemary Brandt, my producer, I think Michael will be here in studio with me on Monday because it is tax time, and Michael and I will be talking about tax tips. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, our lovely and talented producer, Rosemary Brandt, the lovely and talented marketing director, Deborah Howard, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.